In the last powerful days of Another Way of Life, when everything happened in cars, when sullen, desperate men would do anything for a tankful, in the troubled years of the 100-year gas war and the terrible food insurrection, when armies mixed mustard and gas and relished war, in those frightened times, private citizens often had to do the terrifying work of real police, apprehending criminals and solving tricky moral problems. They had private eyes, but public fists, full tanks, but clean consciences. And tonight's story is only typical.
Car Hook, starring Dirk Yogurt as Dick Private, Private Dick. Tonight's chilling story, Roller Maidens from Outer Space.
Saturday morning. I just locked myself out of the office for a cool weekend that promised to be gin-soaked and hand-rubbed. At least that's what I figured she'd meant when she said, "Let's get drunk and refinish my furniture." Anyway, it was the way she said it, you know, real husky like a lead dog in a snow job, and I wasn't about to be left out in the cold. Damnation. Ah, well, I figured it wouldn't hurt just to answer it. A private Seamus is always hungry. I hadn't been exactly flush, and this might just be the ace in the closet that put some pizza in the pantry. "Go ahead," something said to me. "Answer it, she'll wait." So I did, only to wind up holding the anchovies in more ways than one. Dick Private, Private Detective.
Mr. Private, sir.
That's right, pal.
My name is Regular Boinklin. My wife, Ethel, and I have been opposite you for many years on another network.
Oh, yeah. The Ethel and Regular show. I've heard of you. What's the matter? Swallow your car keys?
No.
Lock yourself out of the house?
No.
Want to know how to make an attractive bookend out of a shoebox and a brick?
No, nothing that exciting, but, look, you gotta get over here.
Well.
Right away. You're just a couple of channels away. You can make
Nobody
it.
Nobody ever made it before.
No, come on. It's really weird over here.
Well, it ain't no Swiss picnic over here, pal.
But you don't understand. It's terrifying. Nothing is normal.
Well.
We all seem to be dreaming the same dream.
Wow, well, that's
and
terrific.
And there's all these strange balls of light in our neighborhood and...
Hold it.
Glad to.
Now hold it up to the light.
Oh, okay.
He was right. This was serious. Light. Too much light. More light than I'd ever seen. It seemed impossible and just too easy that this amiable Zip had discovered what we'd all been looking for years. The drain, the big leak, the place where it all goes in and doesn't have to come out. Listen, Boinklin.
Oh, yeah?
Stay where you are. Too much power means trouble, and trouble is my problem.
What?
Hello, dear little friends.
Hello, dear little
Aren't
friends.
We enjoying
Aren't
your
we enjoying your movie?
Aren't we really?
Aren't we really having a terrific time?
That's
right.
I'm Nick
Exxon,
owner,
general manager, president of the United States Motors, formerly Jailbird Motors. Have the used automobile, used pickup, or perhaps like a younger girl, straight teeth like these. Wonderful examples. Here's 74 Squatdale grill, final dirt machine.
Fine little dirt machine.
Here's the Elgin 74 fruit bag.
Here's the Elgin 74 fruit bag.
Dating capital of the world.
Dating capital.
Here's another one. Here's another one. Another one.
Another one. Another 74
Hundreds of them. We've got hundreds of 74 fruit bags. We're loaded down, pregnant, fine automobiles, and none of the cars are stolen, friends. Kind of service.
Calling all coordinates. Calling all coordinates.
Moon 4 degrees Taurus.
Roger. Cancer rising. Roger. 29. Pisces 59.
Roger. This one looks serious, Roger.
You're right. We'd better call... Captain Equinox!
Captain Equinox, the deadliest foe of those who attest our ailing democracy. By day, Adolf Tree, a mild-mannered college professor. By night, Kiki, a mini-skirted habitué of Hollywood's starstruck Sunset Strip. But twice a year, he's...
Captain Equinox!
Today's dumb story spies over Broadway, but first, here's Captain Equinox himself with today's secret coded message.
Okay, Solstice Squad, get your pencil and paper ready and listen up. You can buy a car, rent a car, or have your car serviced at Jack Poet Volkswagen in Highland Park at 5944 North Figueroa off the Avenue 60 exit of the Pasadena Freeway. Got that down?
If you don't have your decoder, tear off the top of your daddy's car and mail it, together with 10 cents in cash or coin, to Captain Equinox Decoder Tie, Drop City, Colorado. And now...
Captain Equinox!
Deep under the ground, billions of years ago, at the dawn of time, scads of little black, greasy things died. And through tremendous heat and pressure, they were turned into coal and petroleum. Today, that petroleum is brought to the surface by such machines as this oil-powered Larkspoken that I'm standing next to. It reaches deep into the big holes where the oil is sloshing around and sucks it up. Oil that is refined here is filtered through 17 layers of fine mesh Viking cheese cloth and then stored in huge sediment vats for 36 hours before reaching your automobile. That's why we say you can trust your car to the man who wears the horns, the friendly Vikings at Valhalla stations from Oceanside to Oxnard.
See William Bob Hebelhauser, a profile. To be kind, my investigations before meeting the man often seemed at odds with the facts. After meeting him, I found myself thinking that perhaps the facts themselves were merely at odds with common sense. For instance, his own account, as reported in several breathless interviews by the financial press, always claimed a much smaller number for his age than the 70-odd years noted in the official biography issued by his own press office, and this was not the least of the inconsistencies. His physical height, for instance, seemed to vary wildly depending upon which account you read, as did reports of his wealth, his marital status, his schooling, and so forth. But then I thought, as I finally pointed my car toward Las Vegas, exaggeration sets the tone for any examination of this remarkable man. Although certainly old, he is at the same time one of the youngest thinking chief executives of any automobile company in history. While certainly short, he stands tall in any fair assessment of his extensive achievements. In fact, C. William Bob Hebelhauser turned out to be a diminutive creature of quite respectable age. He reached up to shake hands with me as I was ushered into his office. He's a young giant, I thought, no matter what his age. He had a decidedly youthful glint to his eye. He has only the one eye. And he is legend in an industry already old in our century. Ford, GM, and Chrysler, even the great Japanese firms are familiar ground to him because he's put in his time at the upper echelons of several of those giants. His name is not new to anyone who's followed the ups and downs of the manufacture and sale of steel animals, as he likes to call them, and in recent days his bizarre personal exploits have been blatantly trumpeted by newspapers and tabloids and television shows all over the world. By now the outlines of his remarkable life are well known. His hardscrabble youth caught between a sodden father and an embattled mother, his early employment as a tunneler and then taster in the salt mines of Nevada, and inevitably, his rise into the public eye as a daredevil racing driver, the firm hands and rock-hard blue eyes still showing the reflexes and daring of a man groomed on the salt tracks of Nevada in the gut-wrenching, dangerous sport called Crazy Eights, as pioneered by outcasts of the racing fraternity and known officially and quite respectably now as backwards double-oval stock car avoidance racing. C. William Hebelhauser is his name, although friends and family have called him Bob since as a small child he began insisting that it was his name. It's been just this kind of persistence and vision, combined with a stubborn individual sense of destiny, that has taken Bob Hebelhauser from the depths of the salt mines up into the sunshine of unimagined wealth to create and run single-handedly a multi-billion dollar corporation whose first car will reputedly hit the showrooms of its own dealerships within the next year. We talked that evening up in his executive complex, a glass-domed structure perched atop the massive administrative stack of Western Motors headquarters just outside the city of Las Vegas in southern Nevada. Dressed casually in bright red slacks and a yellow golfing shirt embellished with a little figure of himself where the alligator usually goes, sporting bright red golf shoes with extra long cleats, Bob Hebelhauser looked out over the neon-lit city of crapshooters, leaned back in his swivel chair, and talked to me about his career and his life. I first asked him to comment on the fact that his chief interest seemed to be the production of what is reported to have been a dream of his since he was a youngster, the so-called Beavertail SCX-170 sports car.
"Son, that's a fact," he said. "My dreams just plain have a way of coming true. I get obsessed with my dreams, and I have to carry them out, no matter what the cost."
I ventured that many have surmised that this particular obsession might be so prohibitively expensive as to actually sap the corporate strength of Western Motors. In fact, I mentioned several members of his own board of directors have recently told the Wall Street Journal that they feel that collapse will be imminent unless the company goes back to its original plans to buy Korean lunchboxes, import and refit them with Laotian two-cylinder engines and four hard tires, and ship them to the Ukraine in return for atomic credits.
"Listen," he said, fixing me with his famous grin, "I don't have any quarrel with my own people. I understand the board's anxiety, but I come from a school that says that if you don't go forward, you're probably going to be hit from behind by something that you would have missed if you'd been going backwards in the first place."
I asked him if he meant a school for the kind of lessons he'd learned in his early racing days, and he said yes. Was he speaking of a kind of school of hard knocks?
"No, no," he laughed. "Although I did actually attend the school for hard advanced knocks at Harvard once. I did two semesters of post-grad work there in the late 70s, and I sure learned my lesson."
I asked him what that lesson was.
"Animals," he said. "People are animals. We had lessons in behaving like animals, and I found out that the beaver is aerodynamic to the max. I asked him to confirm what he seemed to be saying, that his dream of an affordable sports coupe shaped like an animal, a concept that has so far frankly garnered laughter from competitors and friends alike, was the direct result of going to the Harvard Advanced School of Hard Knocks. He said, "Let me put it this way. If you mean that I'm in love with the Beavertail SCX-170 and have been ever since I was a kid, then you're right. But at Harvard, I learned a couple of things. I learned, for instance, that I'm a sentimental guy, and if you get in my way, I'll hurt you in some sentimental way. It's tit for tat with me. Word of warning went out to the boys on the board of directors just the other day, and I made sure it was on Harvard stationery, you can bet. Went like this. If you hire me, you hire my dreams. So just let me dream until I'm through, or I'll get you, and I'll get you good." "And when will that be?" I asked. "When will what be? What were we talking about?" He seemed confused, but then so was I. "I forget," I said, and looked to my next question. Had he, in fact, done the original designs and schematics for the Beavertail SCX-170 himself? "Damn right. In fact, I did. It's an interesting story, or at least I sure find it interesting," he said, leaning so far back in his chair that he nearly tipped it over. "I was in detention class. In those days, there was a lot of interest in detaining kids. At random junior high in Tonopah one day, when a great idea came to me. Now, I'm not a particularly religious man, but when something of this consequence occurs, it makes me think, gives me pause, makes me consider my own destiny, if you see what I mean. I was the kind of kid who liked to design cars of the future and such. I'd always been fascinated with the pure shapes of cars, and I was drawing in class." "Drawing a car?" I asked, hoping my tape recorder was working. "Actually," he replied, "I was drawing a humorous sketch of the detention teacher, Mr. Beavers." He had a sly look on his face, and I had to wonder if he was joking with me. I told him that I was beginning to lose track of the point here. "Well, the point was to draw Mr. Beavers with real big teeth, like a beaver. Get it?" "Of course I get it," I said. "Well, some do, some don't. Anyway, I began to combine that sketch with an idea I had for a car. I mean, to improvise, to just let my mind run free, if you know what I mean." "I know what you mean," I said. "Well," he said, leaning back and lighting a cigar and throwing the match in his wastebasket and watching it flame up until an alarm rang somewhere and the company's fire department rushed in and put it out. "Well, adding a nice fat beaver tail to Mr. Beaver seemed like a good idea once I got the big front teeth right. And then I thought, why not just make the whole idea into a car? And that was it. That was the big idea that was to influence the rest of my life. It's funny how little things can become big things." I said I didn't find it that funny. My clothes smelled like smoke, and a good deal of water had found its way into my shoes. "Well, some think so and some don't. The beaver tail makes excellent sense, both aerodynamically and design-wise. You see, the tail of a beaver swims hydrodynamically through the water just the way the beaver tail SCX-170 swims through air and asphalt. Or at least that's what our engineers tell me." This time he leaned so far back in his chair that it did tip over, sending his diminutive figure thudding to the floor. I replied that he seemed to be saying that the unusual beaver tail name for this car was initially a childish joke. "Is that what I said? Sometimes I get confused when this subject comes up." He crawled back up into his chair. "Well, the whole concept seems absurd," I said. "A beaver, number one, has a body in front of the tail that disturbs the airflow if a beaver were ever to move quickly through the air, which beavers don't. Beavers swim through water." "I'm perfectly aware of what beavers swim in. Just stop picking on me," he complained. "All right," I said. "Let's move on to something else. How is the car to be manufactured?" "Well, it's made all over the world, each and every part. As just one example, for instance, the steering wheel is first fabricated in Hong Kong, then shipped to Taiwan for coating, then to Kentucky to our Enthusiasm plant for plating. It's then knocked down for shipment to Bangkok, where it's reassembled to satisfy local content regulations, and eventually labeled, then knocked down again and dispatched to Cooperstown for induction into the Hall of Fame." I asked him if he wasn't thinking of baseball. "No, oddly enough, the steering wheel Hall of Fame is in Cooperstown, quite near the Baseball Hall of Fame," he said. My next question was the key one, the reason I was really talking to him in the first place. I asked him to address a subject that arose often these days, the persistent rumor that he might be thinking of running for public office in the future, in particular the office of President of the United States. He laughed a jolly laugh. "Well, that's just not true," he said. "Or if it is, it isn't just yet. Or if it isn't at all, then it might be, but not in the conceivable future. That is, not yet. But maybe. You'll find me positive on that." I said that seemed pretty clear to me, and he replied, "That's what people say who are close to the political scene. Frankly, a lot of professionals think that this country, after surviving several years with virtual idiots as presidents, might welcome the candidacy of a solid corporate figure like myself. And that's why we may make a run at it." May make a run at what? I asked if he meant a test situation in which dummies are strapped in a car and hurtled against a wall. "I suppose that's what I mean," he replied. "Although I envision a presidential campaign of more than a little dignity, but I'll do whatever it takes." I replied it was certainly his reputation from his racing days. There were still men at Salt Flats who reported withered limbs and steel plates in their heads from encounters with Bob Hebelhauser. "I see you've done your homework." "Well, I guess I've never been shy, but they're wrong, those guys. I've never hurt anyone. And in fact, all I've really ever done in Nevada is make people money. Those bastards are lying."
I changed the subject then and told him that although I was sure it wasn't news to him, he'd come into prominence for the American people through the television commercials for Western Motors that had lately been running with numbing intensity on the TV. I said that this advertising campaign might well, in many people's eyes, be political in its scope. The actual intent of the advertising seemed to be to sell him rather than the commercial showed him as a family man, even as a farming man, certainly in every instance as a man of the people as well as a man of immense wealth, but not as a man with a car. Why, I asked, were cars never shown in any of the ads? He leaned forward in his chair, but a little too far, and toppled to the ground. He rolled over on his back and replied, I said to my people that we must first have a reputation, and since we didn't have the Beavertail SCX-170 quite ready to go, I figured that the best way to overcome all the resistance would be to just go on the air and build confidence in what we did have, me. And it worked. Here it is, a couple of flicks of a beaver's tail later, and we have product, almost. But most important, thanks to television, we have a confused public ready to drive whatever I drive when I decide I'm good and ready to drive. And you know what I'll be driving. You'll love the new commercials, by the way. We just finished shooting them today. He hauled himself back up into his chair. I wanted to know if the new spots would delve so deeply into his personal life and mentioned that the last commercials were certainly arresting. You're referring to the lawsuits now, he growled. There was never any truth to the rumor that I was arrested. That woman wasn't my wife anyway. She was just an actress hired to portray my wife. But, I said, you never had a wife in the first place. Incorrect, he snapped. I have several ex-wives in good standing in the communities in which they are housed. Nothing in those ads said I was currently married to that woman. She could have just as easily represented any one of my ex-wives as easily as she could have represented my current wife. But, I said, you don't have a current wife. So what? TV advertising never lies. We're not allowed to lie. I read that in TV Guide. Get off this subject and move on to something else. Okay, I said. Let's talk about power. The Beavertail SCX-170 has not only an unusual power plant, but also a highly controversial fuel source, and I asked him if he could address that. Oh, you mean the stories that the car is powered by air pollution? I replied that I'd heard that the Beavertail SCX-170 would actually use the polluted air around us, and other even more ridiculous stories. They're all true. You've got to be joking, I said. I haven't made a joke about the Beavertail SCX-170 since I was in high school, he said. And what was that joke, I asked. Who cares? Next question. On second thought, let me take a minute here to just explain myself. The Beavertail SCX-170 is the car of the future. That's one thing we know for sure. Our research people have checked on that, and it's true. Fuel is taken in out of the atmosphere itself through the extra-large intake system placed in the front of the chassis. Two large white manifolds direct the air into a compression chamber, or head as it's called. I can say that the power plant is a conventional 2.7 OL multiport fuel-injected OHC V6 that you might find anywhere. One added benefit I can reveal is that since the car creates pollutants as well, puts them back into the air, it is in that sense helping on fuel economy for everyone and solves an environmental conundrum that has bothered this industry for some time. Stunned, I replied that he seemed to be saying that while the car would create more toxins, it would at the same time somehow be in balance because of its ability to eat pollution itself. Well, actually, the car behind our car will eat the pollutants. It would just be lucky for the driver behind if he, too, was driving a Beavertail SCX-170. That's what I mean to say. I asked him about the persistent rumors that the car will cost more than $150,000, and that for a two-seater with no trunk space. Ah, the car's a little expensive, yes, but think of the savings on fuel. For instance, you can draft by getting right up on someone's tailpipe and consuming their exhaust. It's the car of the future. Is that it? Are we done now? One more question, I said, and tried to get an answer as to why the car is called the Beavertail. Because it looks like a Beavertail. It's low and flat and wide for less weight. It literally slaps the road like a beaver's tail slaps the surface of the water. I mentioned that that would seem to be hard on the suspension. Well, there is no suspension, at least not in the conventional sense of the word. In order to keep costs down, we've designed a way to make the road surface itself serve as suspension. I replied that it sounded as if that would be good news for chiropractors and orthopedic surgeons. We want to make everyone happy, especially me. He leaped down to the floor. The chair towered above him. I hopped down as well, and we shook hands. One last question, I said. All kidding aside, Bob, how did you really come up with the name? Bob? No, the car. Beavertail SCX-170? Let me think. It came to me in a dream. What sort of a dream, I asked. A bad dream, he said. Kind of a nightmare. With beavers in it.